From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Syria's President Bashar al-Assad has vowed to continue his assault on rebel-held eastern Ghouta, where more than 600 have died since February 18th. In comments to journalists broadcast by state television, Mr. Assad said he'll continue to fight terrorism. The Syrian leader said there was no contradiction between daily five-hour humanitarian ceasefires and ongoing combat operations. He said most of the 400,000 residents of eastern Ghouta near Damascus want to return to state control. Thousands of residents have been huddling in basements and underground shelters. Among those trying to escape the relentless bombardment is Firas Sabdullah.
We are underground. These tunnels and shelters underground in eastern Ghouta. People here are hiding from the massive bombardment and the explosive barrels from the helicopters.
One of the rebel groups in eastern Ghouta, Jaish al-Islam, called the government barrage a scorched-earth policy. UN aid convoys have been unable to reach the besieged residents. The White House condemned the offensive Sunday, accusing Russia of killing innocent civilians and conducting at least 20 bombing missions. It also took aim at the Syrian regime's use of chemical weapons. In Burkina Faso, two suspects are in custody following Friday's coordinated attacks on military headquarters and the French embassy in Ouagadougou, with suspicions of army involvement. At least seven soldiers were killed, dozens of others were wounded. The attacks were claimed by a Mali-based extremist group linked to Al-Qaeda. A joint French-Burkinabé investigation is underway. It's the third major attack in 2 years in Burkina Faso. This is VOA News. National election results in Italy appear to have produced a hung parliament, but exit polls show voters flocking to the far-right parties in record numbers. Anti-establishment five-star movement member Alessandro Di Battista said if the data holds up, it will be a victory for his party. The ruling center-left conceded defeat. It's still not clear whether Italians have been swept up by the Euroscepticism that has emerged in other parts of Europe. China's National People's Congress has opened its annual two-week session in Beijing, a meeting that's expected to do away with presidential term limits, making Xi Jinping China's indefinite leader. Gordon Holden is a China analyst at the University of Alberta.
This is consolidating his power. I don't think there's much doubt that he would be in the, not just the greater among equals, but in a category all by himself. But this move, I think, consolidates his position and allows him potentially to stay in power as long as he chooses.
Ahead of the session, Chinese leaders set an economic growth target this year of about 6.5% and announced a boost of 8% in defense spending. China's Premier Li Keqiang Monday said Beijing opposes protectionism and supports the settlement of trade disputes through negotiation. Last week, President Donald Trump announced stiff tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. Peter Navarro, Mr. Trump's trade advisor, appeared on Fox News Sunday.
The reason why the president is doing this is because if he doesn't do this, we will lose our aluminum industry very quickly and our steel industry very quickly thereafter.
Mr. Trump is expected to levy a 25% tax on steel imports, a 10% tariff on aluminum, a move that alarms a number of lawmakers, including Maine's Angus King, who appeared on NBC's Meet the Press.
I've heard from two small companies in Maine that use steel. One of them has already seen about an 8% increase in the price that they're going to be charged for the steel that they use to fabricate things. Another is a company way up north in Fort Fairfield, Maine, right near the Canadian border. They get their steel from Canada simply because of the proximity, and they're very worried about the impact. So, you know, you want to do these kinds of things with a scalpel, not a chainsaw.
Navarro said the U.S. has been the victim of unfair trading, resulting in an annual $500 billion trade deficit. A high-level South Korean delegation is traveling to North Korea for 2 days of talks. It follows a thaw in inter-Korean relations, the participation of Pyongyang in the Winter Olympics. Germany's Social Democrats have voted to form a coalition government with Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats, ending months of political uncertainty. Ms. Merkel's political fortune suffered a setback in September's poll. In the U.S. Northeast, hundreds of thousands are still without power 2 days after a fierce late winter storm brought heavy snows, coastal flooding, and high winds. The storm left at least 9 people dead. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbwate in Washington. Today's Monday, March 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan President Museveni sacks his Inspector General of Police, Kale Kayihura.
The president had directed the Inspector General of Police to clean up the police, to remove suspected criminals from the police, or to ensure that the police is not infiltrated by criminals from outside. Apparently, this has failed for the last 1.5 years.
Ofwondo Opondo is the Ugandan government spokesman. There was a brawl Sunday involving supporters of two factions of Zimbabwe's opposition MDC party. We'll have an expert view on the rising violence against peacekeepers and civilians in Mali. And Southern Cameroon secessionists reject President Paul Biya's new cabinet appointments.
Mr. Biya can make all his cabinet members to be Anglophones. Mr. Biya can even move the capital of Cameroon to Boya. That will not change our position for an independent Southern Cameroon.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian Separatist Movement of Cameroon. And today, Monday, is the final day of campaigning in Sierra Leone's March 7th presidential election. We will talk with the spokesman of two opposition parties. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's portion, our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni Sunday sacked his longtime Inspector General of Police, Kale Kayihura, and the Security Minister, Lieutenant General Henry Tumukunde. Government spokesman Ofwondo Opondo says Mr. Museveni took the action because the two men failed to raid the police of criminal elements. But four-time former presidential candidate of the Forum for Democratic Change, Chisa Besigye, President Museveni, as commander-in-chief, is to blame for the rise of crime and not the police. He accused President Museveni of mismanaging the security system. But Ofwondo Opondo says crime has been on the rise in Uganda because the leaders of the police and internal security services have been involved in ongoing squabbles in the media.
As may be recalled, for the last 1 year or so, the president had directed the Inspector General of Police to clean up the police, to remove suspected criminals from the police, or to ensure that the police is not infiltrated by criminals from outside. Apparently, this has failed for the last 1.5 years. Secondly, there have been ongoing wrangles in the media between the Inspector General of Police, General Kayihura, on the one hand, and the Minister of Security on the other. And there has been a general perception and blame that perhaps because of this wrangle, that is why the security agencies, particularly intelligence agencies and the police, have not been able to deal with the ongoing criminalities, especially armed robberies, unexplained murders, some of which the police and the internal security agencies haven't been able to reach the criminals.
Let me get you to respond to what Dr. Besigye said, the former leader of the FDC, Forum for Democratic Change. He said that Kayihura should not be blamed, but instead it should be President Museveni.
Well, at the end of the day, I think Mr. Kizza Besigye would want to gain political capital on any political moves or changes in government, and therefore I think he's right to try and target the president. But the president cannot do every job. The president acts through delegation. He delegates people. And therefore, when he delegates you and you fail to do your job, he has responsibility to account to the public. Yes, as the English say, the buck stops with the top person, and therefore the buck stops with the president. But I think Mr. Besigye is simply trying to score a political point.
Dr. Besigye also said that the National Resistance Movement, NRM, is to also be blamed because it failed to streamline promotion system in the leadership of the security agencies, leading to some of the problems that the police have.
First of all, we do believe as government that the security agencies and security in the country has greatly improved over time, in spite of the wrongs, in spite of the promotions that perhaps Mr. Besigye may be questioning. Mr. President himself has been a part of the security system. How did he himself get promoted? It is the same rules and regulations that were used to promote him. But I think he simply wants every time to try and make a political point or score a political point. He thinks he can gain political point in this criticism. I don't think he's sincere with them, because I know that both the army and the police are more professional, are more capable today than they were 20 years ago, than they were 10 years ago, than they are 5 years ago. Yes, human weaknesses could be there, and many people in many times in offices don't work well. But that cannot be a reason for somebody to say the NRM is the one who has failed.
Ofwando Opondo is the Ugandan government spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. There was a brawl Sunday in Bulawayo involving supporters of two factions of Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, of the late former Prime Minister Margaret Tsvangirai. Before Tsvangirai died last month, he handpicked Nelson Chamisa, one of the party's three vice presidents, to head the MDC. But there has been a battle over the leadership of the party, especially between Tokozani Kupe and Chamisa. On Sunday, supporters of the Kupe wing claimed they were attacked by people, by youth lawyer to Chamisa. Witness Dube is personal assistant to Kupe and one of those who said he sustained a deep cut on his forehead. Dube says he has no doubt Chamisa supporters were the alleged attackers.
As you know, I'm personal assistant to Honorable Dr. Kupe. So she was having a consultative meeting with Bulawayo Matsau, the representatives at the Bulawayo office. The meeting had barely started, but we had barely arrived when suddenly we are accosted by some mostly young people led by this provincial chairperson, Mulando Nube, and his deputy, Felix Maka, and one national executive member, Kunashe Mchemwa, and the others. But these were the ringleaders. Clearly, they were the ones in front, barking instructions, commandeering the couple of dozen youths to attack the office. So these guys then started throwing stones all over the cars that were outside. But by then, I tried to move, go to the alley behind the office to extract Dr. Kupe. As I got to the street behind, that's when I was thrown a barrage of stones. I know the guy who hit me in the head. From there, I lost a bit of consciousness, maybe because I was bleeding profusely, but I still managed to go around the office and get to the front.
Who do you suspect, or who does your leader, Tokozani Kupe, who does she suspect is behind the attack on you and the other members?
Look, there is no price for guessing who this is. You know, when these guys came, when they threw stones and they pushed our guys into the office, there is an anthem for Honorable Chamisa these days that's doing the round. And that anthem was chanted.
Mr. Dube, as you know, Mr. Chamisa was named the new leader of the MDC, the Movement for Democratic Change. Where does Tokozani Kupe stand? Does she support the selection of Chamisa?
Dr. Kupe has not supported the move that has been taken by Honorable Chamisa on constitutional grounds, because he was the elected deputy president at Congress, and her submissions have been consistent that the party was always clear about who was supposed to take over from the late President Tsvangirai, and even the late President Tsvangirai himself. He had made public pronouncements, some of which came out even through the audios that you may have heard in the last week or two, or a few days back, on what he intended to happen with his appointment of Honorables Mutsuri and Chamisa. So she has been very consistent. She has tried to use even party inside channels to resolve this impasse in as far as going to the internal arbiters, who are the Council of Elders.
In the meantime, how much time does the party have? Because there's an election coming up. How much time do you have to sort out all this?
There isn't much time, really, but it's good to also give attention and credence to the real issue why we are having this election anyway. We are having this election because we want to have a change of the governance culture in the country, a return to constitutionalism, a government that does not use violence as a means of attaining any leadership authority, you know, democracy. Those things that we feel as a country, we have been deprived by the leadership of former President Mugabe. So this election is not just about changing personalities and faces.
Witness Dube is the personal assistant to Tokozani Kupe, one of the three vice presidents of Zimbabwe's main opposition, MDC party. You are speaking with me from the capital, Harare. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, the 5th day of March. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Insecurity caused by rising violence continues throughout Mali. Four UN peacekeepers were killed last week when a mine exploded under their vehicle, concluding a violent week for both the civilians and security forces. Researcher Jean-Hervé Gisekel, Deputy Project Director for West Africa at the International Crisis Group, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the violence in Mali.
I think that what we are looking at right now in Mali is a rise of the armed violence in different parts of the country. It's not only peacekeepers being targeted. They've been targeted in the last few years. It's violence, armed violence at the border between Mali and Niger. It's military operations from the Malian forces in central Mali. It's also French operations in the far north near the border with Algeria. So right now there is like a surge in operations, in military operation, and therefore there are consequences for the military personnel, of course, but also for civilians. There have been rumors of human rights abuses recently in Sokolo, for instance. So yes, I mean, the situation does not look good, and there is a clear deterioration of the situation.
It came out recently that the U.S. believes that the perpetrators of the attack in Niger last year that killed four American soldiers and five Nigerian soldiers are now in Mali. Have you heard of operations within northern Mali to try and track them down? And what kind of impact does this have on the security situation overall in the region?
So yes, clearly there are right now operations at the border between Mali and Niger. And these operations are trying to locate and possibly destroy groups, armed groups that are supposedly responsible for the attack against the U.S. soldiers and Nigerian soldiers in Tongo a few months ago, groups connected to the Islamic State in the Greater Sahara. So it's mostly local groups, actually, armed groups like the Gatia and MSA, that are, you know, both of them are ethnic-based militia that are being pushed to try to hand down these groups. Apparently, these groups are also supported by Operation Barkhane. It's not official. I don't think it's official, but there are repeated rumors that the French are also conducting operation in this area.
Last week, the Malian government said it was investigating accusations that the army had kidnapped and executed seven civilians in the Ségou region in February. Have you guys seen it getting worse? You know, what kind of follow-up is being done by the government, if any?
Okay, this has been an ongoing issue for years now. You know, these accusations against the Malian security forces and possible abuses against the civilians. And repeatedly, the Malian authority have said that they will investigate and possibly prosecute perpetrators of such human rights abuses. I should say that so far there have been little evidence that they have indeed really investigated these cases. What is worrying is that there will be no success in Mali if the security forces, the Malian security forces, are not able to reconnect and to rebuild some form of confidence, trust with the local population.
That was Jean-Hervé Gisekel, Deputy Project Director for West Africa at the International Crisis Group. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Today, Monday, is the final day of campaigning in Sierra Leone's March 7th presidential election. Also today, the Opposition Coalition for Change, also known as C4C, led by former Vice President Sam Sumana, is having its final campaign rally at the National Football Stadium in the capital of Freetown. Coalition spokesman Lawrence Coker spoke with viewers Peter Clotty, who is on assignment covering the Sierra Leone election, about today's rally.
Well, I mean, what people expecting to see today would be, first of all, the message, the key messages from Chief Alhaji Sam Sumana. As he has been traversing the whole country during the campaign period, he's been honing the messages in relation to different communities. The flagship message has always been one district, one factory. So in essence, he has been engaging the local people to find out in each district what exactly they need, what exactly they require. So today, being the last rally, people should expect Chief Alhaji Sam Sumana should deliver a holistic message. So the point I'm trying to make here is, if you have heard Chief Alhaji Sam Sumana speak before today, you've heard part of the message. If you want the full picture, you want to understand how all the dots are going to connect, then you need to come out today to hear what he has to say.
So let me ask you this. With one district, one factory, how much is he willing to put on the table? How is he going to raise revenue to ensure this is actualized pragmatically in the field?
That's a very good question. The engagement that Chief Alhaji Samsumana has been doing with the different communities has been about scoping what needs to be done. One of the reasons a lot of projects don't work is because we don't involve the people who are supposed to benefit from these projects. We don't involve them in the planning. So what I can assure people is that period, that ongoing period of consultation has led Chief Alhaji Samsumana to fully understand the resources that he's going to need to deliver on these. He's going to actualize this using public-private partnerships.
Let me ask you about the concerns that people have expressed about possible violence, accepting the election results, and how quickly the Electoral Commission will be able to get all the results in place, certify them before announcing them. How do you address those challenges that your supporters, as well as the entire nation, talk about?
C4C are predicting a landslide victory. A lot of people are talking about second round and all of that. C4C are talking about a landslide victory in our favor.
Lawrence Coker is spokesman for the Opposition Coalition for Change Party. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty, who is on assignment in Freetown. A spokesman for Sierra Leone's main opposition party, the Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, says the party is sure of a victory in Wednesday's presidential election because the message of the party's standard bearer, retired Brigadier General Julius Mada Bio, has resonated well with the people. Besides, SLPP National Publicity Secretary Lahai Lawrence Lima says the SLPP is confident because it is going against an unpopular ruling All People's Congress Party.
Victory is installed for the Sierra Leone People's Party, ranging from the premise that we have a credible leadership who happens to be our presidential candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio. And he has relentlessly endeavored to campaign right across the country to sell his policies very well. And that has resonated well with the people of Sierra Leone and are ready to cast their ballots in favor of him and the SLPP on March 7, 2018. And we want to commend so far the National Electoral Commission for involving us in all decision processes regarding the electoral process. And we also want to thank them for addressing most of the concerns we have.
Mr. Lima, you said that the SLPP is sure of victory. How do you get victory when you have so many candidates in the election? And what do you say to Sierra Leoneans who say all the opposition parties should have come together to form some kind of a coalition to go against the ruling APC?
Our victory starts from the point that we are going into this election with a very unpopular incumbent party. Why am I saying the incumbent is very unpopular? Sometime back in the 2007 when they were campaigning, they campaigned with a version that Sierra Leoneans should vote for the new APC.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, who was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. Secessionists in Cameroon's Anglophone region say no amount of last-minute political changes by President Paul Biya would dissuade them from their goal of getting independence for the English-speaking regions. This comes as President Paul Biya, over the weekend, made new cabinet changes, appointing two officials from the Anglophone regions. But Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian Separatist Movement, says even if President Paul Biya moves Cameroon's capital from Yaoundé to Bouaké, the capital of the Southwest region, that will not change their position for an independent Ambazonia.
We in the Federal Republic of Ambazonia, we have declared our sovereignty, our independence. And no matter what Mr. Biya does in French Cameroon, it has nothing to do with us. Mr. Biya can make all his cabinet members to be Anglophones. Mr. Biya can even move the capital of Cameroon to Bouaké. That will not, by any means, change our position for an independent Southern Cameroon. Our issue is no longer that of marginalization. It is that of annexation. And we have made up our mind, this will never, ever happen again. We want our sovereign country, Southern Cameroons.
Mr. Anu, but I thought the purpose of your movement is because you feel that the Anglophone region had been marginalized. Not only that, the current prime minister come from the Anglophone region. The president has appointed the minister for decentralization and local development from your area, and also the minister for secondary education. Those are two key positions there.
Two key positions out of how many? Out of over 60 positions. But forget about that. Anglophones have always have a few cabinet positions in that government. They've always had the position of
a
prime minister.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Amazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Champions League Round 1 first leg matches scheduled for Tuesday 6th and Wednesday 7th March 2018. Mo Nana of Gabon will travel to Egypt to face Al Ahly, while Horoya of Guinea will host Generation Food from Senegal. Young Africans of Tanzania will face Township Rollers of Botswana in Tanzania, while Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia will welcome debutant Plateau United of Nigeria. 12 matches have been slated to be played on Wednesday. The aggregate winner after the return matches will book a spot in the recreative group stage of Africa's premium club competition. And now to women's football. The Moroccan city of Marrakesh will be the center of attraction from the 5th to the 7th of March 2018 for the first ever CAF Women's Football Symposium. The two-day event under the theme Raising Our Game is expected to chart a new course for the development of women's football on the continent. It will also define the future of the women's game as various stakeholders discuss, exchange ideas and knowledge towards raising the standard. Paul Put has been named head coach of Guinea, replacing Mohamed Kamfouri Bongura. The Belgian's appointment was announced at a press conference in Conakry at the weekend. Away from football news, Simidele Adeife Omonola Adebo is a Nigerian skeleton racer who competed at the just concluded 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. She is Nigeria and Africa's first female skeleton athlete, as well as the first black female athlete in the sport of skeleton. Simidele says being the first black female athlete in the sport of skeleton is a fulfillment of a dream she will cherish in a long time to come.
Pyeongchang was really amazing. I mean, for me, it was the fulfillment of a lifelong dream. And I think to be able to make history for Nigeria was extra special. So I just enjoyed every moment and had fun with it. About 5 months ago, I tried out for skeleton and started the skeleton journey. And here I am.
Ivory Coast athlete Murere Hawuri powered to victory to claim 60 meters gold, with Ivory Coast compatriot Marie Jose Talau taking silver in the final race of the second day of the World Indoor Championships in Birmingham. The 30-year-old Hawuri ran 6.97 seconds, the sixth fastest race ever.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I've trained for this so hard this season. Going into the background training, my coach, you know, Alan Powell has told me, like, you know, we need to get ready for indoors. And it was tough because I'm just coming off of a little bit of a depression. I lost my father last year to cancer. So it's been very, very difficult. And I just feel so blessed.
In tennis news, Egyptian Omar Asar and Dina Masharraf are the champion of the 2018 International Table Tennis African Top 16 Cup held in Nairobi, Kenya. To emerge as the new men's champion on Sunday, Omar Asar had to dig deep to beat Nigeria's Arna Quadri 4-3 in the entertaining explosive final. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, March 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a productive week.
Hello, my friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk.
Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Next Monday, nails and beauty. This is Next Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.